And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. And we are streaming live at richarddugan.com at those times. So we encourage you to go to our website and listen to our programs if you're not listening to the live stream during those times of 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. Sunday or Monday at 1 a.m. We podcast the programs so that you can listen to the entire interview. You say, entire interview? What are you talking about? Isn't the whole thing on the radio? No, sometimes we go longer than the 50 minutes that they allocate for this broadcast. So I would highly recommend that you go to SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, as well as Stitcher, and also the homepage of richarddugan.com or the radio show's page. And when you're listening to the SoundCloud files, there's a little grocery cart in the upper right-hand corner, right next to the share box if you wanted to share the interview with someone. But it's a grocery cart. Now, normally that's set up on SoundCloud so that if, say, that person's podcast was selling something or what have you, you'd click on it and you'd buy it. In our case, it takes you to our guest's website, and our guest's website will be given out here shortly. We hope that you will do that. Also, if you like what we're doing, if you want to know more about us, go to our missions page. You can read about us as well. And then if you'd like to support us, we are grateful for any support that we can get. We have a PayPal account that's set up so that it goes straight into the, so to speak, Tell Me Your Story account that helps to defray the costs of this broadcast. So if you can, great. If not, we'll take energetic support as well. Just send it on. We can use all the help we can get, and we are grateful for that as well. I'm going to start out today's program as many books do that we maybe read as kids or even as adults. But this is a little different kind of story. And it starts out, once upon a time, in a galaxy far, far away, it was a dark and stormy night. Now, does that have your attention? I don't know. You're going to have to let me know. It sounds interesting, confusing, but nonetheless, I don't know if it's a winner or not, and we're going to find out. Maybe it's a good start to a story that I might tell. And we're going to find out if it's the best story to win, because we're going to be talking with the author of The Best Story Wins, How to Leverage Hollywood Storytelling in Business and Beyond. I keep doing that. I love that. I don't know why, but it's a cute thing. Matthew Lund, thank you so much for joining us on the program, and it's great to have you with us. I'm looking forward to some great stories here today.
Hey, well, thank you for inviting me. I'm always up for talking about story. So thank you, Richard.
It does seem that is the core. When we first started doing this specific broadcast, 2007, 19, 12 years ago, quick math, mm-hmm. We wanted to talk to people about their story, obviously, and how they were making a difference in the world for themselves as well as the people around them, how they were working to make this a better world for everyone. And in the process, of course, we talked to professional storytellers, not just movie makers, not just authors, but there are people out there who are just that. They are professional storytellers. They might sit around a campfire and they might share the oral tradition of storytelling. And I have a story, and I'm going to give you the opening line to it. And I think it's rather intriguing, and it might actually be a good opening line because I've always heard it said when I was in Southwest Lit class in high school, two things. Number one is you want to grab them, or as the phrase in Hollywood is hook them, at least with the first sentence or at least in the first paragraph. If you don't, you might as well forget about it. So yeah. Here's the opening line. This is the opening line. Quote, let me ask you a question. Do you want to live or do you want to die? Now, yeah, I may not like your answer, but I'm going to support you in whatever that is. Now, that is a true story, a true question that I asked my wife in 2001 when she was diagnosed with cancer. She had gone through the surgery and was preparing for chemo. And unbeknownst to me, she had already made the decision weeks earlier. But, I was where I was at. And so I asked her that bluntly. If she had chosen the opposite, I wouldn't have liked it, but I would have supported her in it because it's her choice. So let me ask you, is that a good opening line?
Absolutely. That's a great opening line. You know, it definitely would pull anybody in, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know that I'm working, literally, I have been working for 11 years actually longer than that. I take that back. 18 years. 18 years I've been working on a book, and that's the opening line to that book. And it's about choices, which is what this program is about as well, and trying to give people ideas as to how they can make their world a better place as well. So what we want to do is we want to talk about doing that through the process of telling stories. And you, I'm just curious, you know, our listeners don't know you from Adam. So, you know, what makes you this expert that knows how to tell stories? Tell us. I know what it is, but you need to tell our listeners you think you know better than anybody else how to tell a good story and get people hooked in.
Well, I love that. I don't know if I would say I am the absolute authority on storytelling. I don't think anybody is, but I've been, you know, my story has taken me to have a number of opportunities to create stories. And, you know, like most of us, we grow up hearing stories, seeing stories. TV, movies, our family, friends. I think for me, I was definitely intrigued in storytelling, but in the beginning it was the arts. It was, drawing, painting, film, and in specific, it was animation. And ever since I was a little kid, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to pursue animation. And you know, that led me to having a career for over 25 years so far, working in the animation industry, everything from working on The Simpsons there in Hollywood on the TV show as an animator, to working for Pixar for 20 years as one of the writers and one of the storytellers there. And, you know, like most things in life, you get an opportunity, you wind up someplace, there is some luck involved, there is some skill involved. And I really just became fascinated with storytelling. You know, I was really into animation and the kind of the technical part of creating an animated film, but quickly when I was working in, on these movies, I realized that really why people loved certain movies, whether they were animated or not, or they didn't, wasn't necessarily because of the actors and the animation. It always came down to which film had the best story. And that's when I was really hooked. I was intrigued. I guess the hook would have been what makes a great story. And you know, I decided to just start devouring everything I could find on what makes a great story and where does storytelling come from and why do we tell stories? What is so powerful about a story? And so, you know, I ended up reading everything from Joseph Campbell to books that are, you know, specifically just for writing movies, like Robert McKee's book on story. And not only was I devouring all these books, I was putting them all into practice as we were on this, I don't know what I would say, kind of a roller coaster ride of making one story after another at Pixar. The very first film I did work on was Toy Story. I'm very proud of that one. And from there, ended up working on over 10 films at Pixar. And every film I worked on, I was, while writing and creating the visual story, I was learning along the whole way. And I think if you ask anybody who is really passionate about a particular subject, while you're learning, you're also failing. You're learning about what I did wrong and how I'm going to try not to do that next time. And so a very long answer here to your question of what do I know about storytelling is I think I've just been a very fortunate individual who's been thrown into a couple of situations with other very talented people and have learned about storytelling by the seat of my pants. And so every day I'm still learning something new about storytelling, and I love sharing what I have learned, the good, the bad, and the ugly, with people like on your show.
Well, we're going to do a little more diagramming, so to speak, of stories. I go back to my Southwest Lit class in high school, where I wrote most of my short stories. It was part of the coursework, and I wrote a story that my instructor really, really liked. He was also a very humorous guy and loved the humor that my friend and I, my best friend and I, used to bring to the class. Mm-hmm. One time in particular, we were sitting there in class. We were taking a test or we were supposed to be reading whatever it was we were supposed to be reading. And it was dead silence. But you could hear through the wall in the other classroom, they were showing a film. And all of the sudden you heard this choir and you heard the, and it was sort of echoey and what have you. And my head went up and I kind of looked around left and right. A little smirk came on my face and I just quietly said, "It's Judgment Day." And the whole class just, now I wasn't a class clown, don't get me wrong, but you're that right. Was the moment I could not resist. I just couldn't resist. But some of the stories that I wrote, one in particular that I've shared on this program before, is it was basically a story about authors who were writing stories, submitting them to a competition, and seeing who would win. And after the competition was over, the winners and the runners-up would come, would go out on a yacht out, you know, out into the ocean, you know, what have you, for a wonderful, after a ceremony party. And there were two in particular, a young boy of 21, a young man of 21, and an older gentleman in maybe his 60s or 70s. And, of course, the older gentleman, he had been competing for years and never won. And thought, this year my story is, it's going to win. I just know it. Turns out the 21-year-old won. And, of course, they go out on the yacht. Well, the elderly gentleman was fit to be. He'd had enough. He'd reached his wit's end. So what he did was he got this little rubber raft with a little motor on it, you know, and he went out to where the yacht was. This was dark and there's a little bit of a marine layer out there. So he was undercover. And he knew where he could hear the yacht off in the distance. He got out. He had scuba gear on. He went out and he went around the boat, the yacht, stringing it with high explosives. And he went and swam back to his little rubber boat, you know, if you will. I know there's a name for it. But anyway, and he set off the explosives, but he didn't count on one thing. In spite of the fact that he'd killed everyone on board and destroyed the boat, the shrapnel punctured his raft, if you will. And because of all of the blood in the water, the sharks came and he was eaten alive. Now, here's the irony. The story I just told you was the story he submitted for the competition. And the title of that short little story was Conflagration at Sea.
Mm.
Now,
it reminds me of those old Terror of the, what were they called? Terror of the Crypt or something? Or
Oh, Tales of the Crypt. Tales of the Crypt. Yes.
Yeah, reminds me of those.
Oh, yeah. I have to say, too, that my childhood and early adolescence, actually even in my late adolescence, was formed by radio theater. And it was CBS Radio Theater Oh, now his name escapes me. The gentleman who was the E.G. Marshall. E.G. Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. And we used to travel down to my grandmother's house in Arizona from Phoenix to Florence and back again. So at night, my dad would turn on CBS Radio, that channel, and we would listen to that going home. And I And so when I was 21, I had my first experience at producing radio theater. It was a Norman Corwin play. The late Norman Corwin, and it was called Moat Farm Murder. I won't go into that right now, but I
gotta say, I love those radio shows as well. You know, you can still get them like on, you know, the Sirius FM kind of thing.
Absolutely,
you know,
I would love to get back into producing them. I was privileged to be the technical producer, if you will, sound editor for. I had never done it before. I spent 18 hours producing a play that turned out to be 33 minutes on the air. It was a little disconcerting for me at that time, but then I realized how much work would go into it. And of course, we were working with record albums, reel-to-reels, cart decks. So, so much different today. But here's the thing, going back to the competition issue, you talk about in your title is it The Best Story Wins.
Yeah.
So we got that. But how in the world does one determine what is the best story? Because isn't that based upon your audience more than the story that you're telling? Because you have two dynamics going there.
Well, you know, first off, I mean, the way you set up the title of the book, it really makes it sound like it's a great hook, which makes me happy for people to wonder how do you say something is the best story? So that's good. That's a good hook. But I would say that, you know, you're absolutely right. Whether it's a piece of art in a gallery or a song or a play, or a radio show or, a book, really, how something that's been created like a story becomes the best is really in the eye of the beholder, right? It's really up to the audience. And whenever I am starting to work on a movie or help somebody put together a story or a pitch, one of the first things I ask them, who is this for? You know, I want to know, who are you trying to connect with? Who is your audience? Because you can tell the best story in the world and it totally lands with nobody. You know, and one of the things I talk about in my book is, you know, when you are putting together a story, you need to know, are you trying to reach a specific audience, one person, your wife, or are you trying to reach the whole world? Are you trying to reach a broad audience?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would say that we all know, well, I think a lot of us have experienced when we have been listening to or watching a great story or experiencing a great story, we get lost. We forget we're in a movie theater. We forget we're in a coffee shop listening to somebody talk. We were just totally transported to a different world, to a different time. And it's a pretty magical experience. And when somebody is able to do that, you can end up inspiring somebody to totally change the way they see the world, the way they do things, whatever their beliefs may have been. You could totally transform somebody through a powerful story. And it's an amazing thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it is. I a couple of my favorite musicians, my favorite performers, sadly, my three favorite have passed. One in 81 and one in 90. I want to say 97. I think it was.
So one's got to be John Lennon.
No,
right?
Actually,
no.
One
John
is
in 81.
You're close.
He passed away.
Well, yes, it was 81, but it was Harry Chapin.
Okay.
And then there's John Denver. And then the other, the third, I think it was in the 21st century here, the 2000s, was Dan Fogelberg. Now,
okay.
Harry was known as a storyteller, and I've been listening to his music for, gosh, since I was 14 or 15 years old. Matter of fact, I had to listen to it with headphones because my dad would not let me play it on his record player because of some of the stories that Harry told. Mm. But I was listening this morning, and of course, in lieu of this interview, and I'm listening to these. And of course, I do this all the time. When I'm listening to a story, whether I'm listening to an audible book, if I'm listening to a song like one of Harry's, I see the movie. I was listening to the audible of Dan Brown's book, not only Angels and Demons, but also the Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
And the movie was playing out. Now, this was way before the movie came out. When the movie came out, however, the main character in my movie was the spitting image of the main character, Tom Hanks, in the actual movie that was released.
That's very seldom that happens. Yeah, I mean, to admit, a lot of times you read a book and you're kind of let down,
yeah,
you know, by the movie.
Yeah.
So.
But I was not. I was intrigued because I wanted to see how they portrayed it.
Yeah.
But see, I've always been that way. I've always, and I grew up legally blind and listening to talking books for the blind and recordings for the blind.
Mm.
And so when I'm listening to these books, boom, I'm watching the movie in my head.
Now, I've got to ask you, yes. So if are you legally blind now?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
Got a lens implant in 1996. I actually have driven in L.A. traffic. How about that?
Well, okay. All right. Well, I'm happy you're not legally blind.
Yeah. Tell me about it. But it's extraordinary to hear or, you know, somebody tell a story. I mean, you talked about Joseph Campbell. I'm connected with the Ojai Foundation and the Joseph Campbell Foundation through a gentleman who is a PhD professor in mythology. We did a series of programs on this program back in 2014, a 12-part series called Mythosophia, Exploring Myth and Wisdom, the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. And it was extraordinary how the subject matter that we did mythology and sports, et cetera, et cetera. But it's these stories that are told, and of course, we get a lot of these stories today. We're getting a lot of these superhero stories.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And I've heard lots of reasons why. I'm curious as to what you think the reasons are why today it does seem that, I mean, there's a series on National Geographic called Viking. My wife and I love that series. It is very historically accurate. My wife's been, she's sort of fact-checking
okay.
it as we go along and finds that it is accurate. But I'm curious as to your thoughts, and then we're going to dive into another area here, but
sure.
Your thoughts on the reason why in this day and age, and it's not that hero-type movies haven't been around, comic strip-type movies have not been around since they've been making them, but more so here in the 21st century and here in the teens, your thoughts as to what's going on in our society that the movie industry, Hollywood or otherwise, feels that we need these movies now?
Well, I think there's probably a couple of reasons. And first, I just want to go back to the, musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you mentioned John Denver, who's a great storyteller. And I think about, you know, musicians like Bob Seger and Journey. And the reason why I love certain musicians is because they do tell a story. And you know, we were just talking about Joseph Campbell and the two things that Joseph Campbell says you find in every story, myth, legend, you know, is a hero and a journey. And those songs that stand out from these great musicians, and there's always a hero on a journey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we think about the stories that are told in great books and movies. Still things, same things going on. It's a hero on a journey.
Yeah.
And I think about why do we pick certain topics? You know, it seems like I go to watch a movie on Netflix, and every time I go on, there's a new movie about, you know, the world has finally done it to themselves. It's destroyed, or it's in the process of being destroyed, either by it's all freezing, or the aliens, or the pollution, or the bomb. And what do we do now, right?
Yeah.
We don't have electricity, or they're zombies. You know, what I think is that, you know, storytelling reflects what is going on in our personal lives, but storytelling also reflects what's going on in the world around us.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously, you know, you go on any news channel, and there's certain topics that keep getting brought up. And one of them is obviously about, you know, our environment, mm-hmm. and what's happening in the world with the climate. And that gets reflected in the stories we tell. And, you know, I think all of us are longing to have somebody save us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're all hoping that there's going to be some group of super smart scientists who are going to solve this problem. Or wouldn't it be better if it was just a superhero, you know,
yeah.
a superhero that could save us from the aliens or the bomb that's going to go off or whatever problem we're in.
Yeah.
So I think
go ahead.
That's the first reason
yeah.
is it really reflects what's going on in the world today. And, you know, you look at all the stories that have been told from different cultures. There's always an element of something that's important. Joseph Campbell said it best where, you know, yeah, there's a hero on a journey every time, but what the hero is, you know, the elements that are in that story may be different. For one culture, it's, you know, something with corn because their whole environment revolves around corn. And then another one, it's about hunting because their world is about hunting.
Yeah.
And I think for us, we do the same thing. The second reason, movie companies, they seldom want to take big chances on something new. It costs a lot of money to make a movie. A Pixar film costs about, you know, over $300 million. You need to make that money back. And so if you can take a piece of intellectual property that people are somewhat familiar with, people know Superman, you already have a built-in audience where people see that poster, they see the trailer and go, oh, Green Lantern or Wonder Woman. I remember her as a kid. Sure, I'm going to go check it out. You don't have to reinvent something. Or you don't have to invent something from scratch. There's already a built-in knowledge of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's the best thing to do to just take something old and just redo it over and over again. But those are the two reasons I think that's happening for all these superhero films.
Yeah,
and they're definitely scraping the bottom of the barrel. You know, they're running out of heroes. So. Hopefully they create some new ones.
And then there are some other stories where there are no heroes or evildoers, if you will. I think of, because I don't really see that in this particular film,
mm-hmm.
At least not in the total context thereof. For example, the movie Interstellar or Contact, those types of science fiction films. There is no real, I mean, there are protagonists of sorts in each of those
right.
films, but when you take a look at the movie as a whole and what message is trying to be presented, that's just it. There's a message there. Mm-hmm. There's sort of an awakening or an insight, if you will, into who we are and why we're here. May not answer that question as to who we are and why we're here or where we're going, but it spurs those kinds of questions and thoughts. And those yeah. are the kinds of films. And then the other type of story that I love is one, and we're talking films here in particular,
sure.
I love those that have a surprise ending that you did not expect. There are two films that I can think of that had that. Number one was Paris at Midnight. And if you haven't seen it, folks, I'm not going to spoil it for you. Suffice it to say, it does not end the way you would like it to end or would expect it to end. And then the other one is Finding a Friend for the End of the World. Mm. You remember that one?
Was that the one with Jim Carrey?
No, not Jim Carrey. This was, oh my gosh, I can't even think of he's in this new film where he's a disabled guy and he creates this world where he can get healed. And I can't remember the actor's name.
Okay.
He was in the American version of The Office.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. That's who I thought you were talking about.
Yeah.
I have seen that film. Right.
And, you know,
You're right. I'm not going to blow how that film ended, but yeah.
But I will say too, that there was a scene in it, and this doesn't give anything away, but there was a scene where he goes home to his father, and I loved the way he handled it. And it's like, boy, if there weren't a disaster, an impending disaster coming, if we could just do it the way he did it.
Yeah.
You know, his dad thought he was there to try to reconcile and fix things, so he started to shift into sort of a pre-programmed intervention kind of thought. And
mm-hmm.
and the son is going, no, Dad, stop. Just stop it. I'm not here for that. We don't have much time, and I just want to spend time with you. We don't have to try to fix anything.
Yeah.
It's not about that. It's about... And I thought that was just a neat scene. It's like, okay, could we just do that in our day-to-day lives now?
Well, you know, I wanted to back up just for
please,
the listeners. Go
ahead.
Because, you know, a lot of times we do say a hero in a story.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, it's probably the most familiar way to describe the main character in a story. But you're absolutely right. The way that it should really be defined as the protagonist, the main character mm-hmm. in a story. And I think we all know that when we see a story, you know, when we say hero, we imagine somebody saving the day. But the main character in a story doesn't always save the day, as we know. The protagonist of a story can be Walter White in Breaking Bad, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We, you know, at times he's the hero, at the times he's the villain.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. There's not always a clear traditional villain, or what we say, an antagonist in a story. But the way I always look at it is when you're crafting a story, one way or the other, you are going to have a main character. Even if you have a film like Ghostbusters with a set of main characters, there will still be a character that comes to the forefront, like Bill Murray,
mm-hmm.
who is kind of the leader of the heroes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the protagonist in a story, they want something. There is a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can be very subtle. Sometimes it can be very obvious, like, you know, capture all the ghosts in New York City and put them away. Sometimes it can be more subtle. But the antagonist, the villain of a story, it can be the traditional Darth Vader, you know, or Voldemort and Harry Potter. But a lot of times we know that the antagonist can be yourself, you know? And even in the movie Contact with Jodie Foster, you know, you're absolutely right. She is the protagonist, and there's something she's longing for. And I would say the antagonist is really what she's struggling with herself, you know? And if I remember correctly, I think she had a lot of guilt and a lot of... she had never fully gotten over the death of her dad.
Yeah.
And these type of stories, you will still find, just like Joseph Campbell, you know, and for everybody out there who doesn't know Joseph Campbell, he was his job was a teacher at a university, you know, teaching people about storytelling, but he was a philosopher, you know, and even Joseph Campbell said, you know, every story has a hero or a protagonist on a journey. And one of the things that I think we tried to do at Pixar was, you know, in the beginning, we did very classic storytelling. We did Toy Story. We had Woody, the protagonist, on a journey. He wanted something. And the antagonist, the villain, which I don't know if you really say is a villain, but is the character in the film that has opposing values to the protagonist was Buzz Lightyear. And we told a lot of stories that were very, that followed that structure. It's the same structure that Gilgamesh follows, right? Mm-hmm. It's Gilgamesh who's, he's got everything he wants in the world. He's kind of a spoiled brat like Woody. And then another character comes along in Kidu, a Buzz Lightyear type character, who ends up throwing his life out of balance. They hate each other first. Gilgamesh even tries to kill his best friend, well, his this character in Kidu until they become best friends. It's a story of Toy Story. And but then, like you mentioned, you want to keep surprising the audience. And so a lot of times you will find a director or a film studio that keeps putting out the same movie over and over again, but with just a different location with different characters. But it's essentially like a buddy story every time. We really wanted to surprise the audience. And we did exactly what we're talking about. We said, you know what? In this next movie, we don't want to have a traditional villain. You know, we want to have no villain. Or we want to surprise the audience by having no audio for the first 12 minutes of this movie and see if we can still make people laugh and cry and be moved. And as we all know, the best part of a movie, the best part of a book, the best part of any story is the end. You know, people don't start reading a book to get to the middle, right? We read a book to get to the end. You've got to make sure that the end really ends up being satisfying, but also surprising. And that's what makes a great story, you know?
If you've just joined us, we are talking about The Best Story Wins. Matthew Lunn is my guest, and we are going to continue talking about this also from the context of the subtitle, How to Leverage Hollywood Stories in Business and Beyond. I'm glad you caught my Toy Story hook there. I've always loved to do that. It's just, you know...
It's very rewarding.
It is, absolutely. It's along the lines of, as a kid growing up, 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 and away!
Exactly. You know?
Or, quick, Robin, to the Batmobile! Anyway,
It's a call to adventure, isn't it?
Exactly right. We are going to continue our conversation with Matthew here on the program. Before we do, though, we're going to take a break here, but I want to let people know about your website, and I want to make sure I get it accurately. It is going to be MatthewLunnStory.com, and I'm going to spell that for you, folks, but we will be linked to it, and it's MatthewLunnStory.com. As I said, we will be linked to it. Again, that little grocery cart with the SoundCloud a playlist when you're listening to the interview or any interview is a link to our guest's website. Matthew, stay right where you are. We're going to be right back here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're going to continue telling this story, and hopefully it'll have a happy ending. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Chapter 2 of Tell Me Your Story here on this fine day. We are grateful to have on our program via Skype Matthew Lunn, who is the author of latest work, The Best Story Wins, How to Leverage Hollywood Storytelling in Business and Beyond. Can't help it. It just comes out. What are you going to do? You basically want to bring the buzz to the boardroom, as they say. And, of course, you are here to help us with those secrets of what makes a great story, an impactful story especially, providing the guidelines to becoming a master storyteller in business. Now, again, I'm not sitting here on this program. If I was of such an ego size, this show would be called the Richard Dugan Show. It's not, because I was having this conversation just the other day. I said, no, the show's not about me. Yeah, I do talk a lot about myself. That's true. But some have even said that I tell pretty good stories. And it's funny. It's like that old joke. Boy, you're really funny, but I wasn't trying to be funny. And I wasn't trying to necessarily tell good stories. I was just sharing from, I guess you could say, I was just sharing from my heart about my life and the things that I've experienced and so forth as examples of what we would be talking about in a given interview. And yet there are professionals. There are people like yourself who would be considered professional storytellers. Now, there is a formula for songwriting. There is a formula for movie making and television shows. And honestly, from what I understand, even from movies to television, there's two different genres. So there's a little different formula there to theater, you know, on the stage and so forth. So let's talk about this this aspect of formula. But let's go ahead and take it into the boardroom. Let's take it into the halls of business and corporations, or even small businesses for that matter, because when you're talking about a company, regardless of how large or small, it's made up of, at the very least, one person, two or more, which means there's got to be some communication. There's got to be some type of interaction on a fairly regular basis. And so somehow, some way, you need to create a, shall we call it, a cooperative environment where people can participate in the process of this particular business, small or large, for A, the success of the business, and in turn, B, the success of everyone participating.
Mm. Well, you know, those are two really good topics for us to dive into. One is the how do you end up using storytelling for business, and then the other one is how do you create a culture at work that allows people. I mean, come on, it's like it's a corporate place allowing storytelling, right? How do you create a culture that inspires and nurtures people to be creative, just like you were working on a movie and. You know, the first thing that I would say is that I think the word formula probably scares people. People go, oh, gosh, a formula, you know, either it makes you think that you're, you know, back in, you know, math class in elementary school, or you're like, oh, a formula, that just means everything's the same and boring. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that, like we'd mentioned in the first part of this show, there are two things that just keep showing up in storytelling again and again. And it is a hero, a protagonist on a journey. I challenge you to think of your favorite, you know, movies, books, plays, and not find a protagonist, a hero on a journey. The reason why we do this is because we see ourselves in our lives as a hero on a journey, whether it's I got to go to the doctor today. I really do got to go to the doctor today. That's why I'm bringing that one up. Or you and your relationship with, you know, your wife, your husband, your kids. We see ourselves, our human psyche as a hero on a journey. That is why we've been telling stories this way. I guess you can call it a formula, but this is the way we see our lives. And the reason why we have a journey, a beginning, middle, and end, is because this is what we witness every day. We see the beginning of the day, the middle of the day, the end of the day. There is a beginning, middle, and an end cycle. And actually, I think this is a really good place to just kind of highlight what are these type of formulas, I guess you could say, or techniques that keep showing up in good storytelling again and again. And one of them, like I just mentioned, is story structure. A story that has a beginning, middle, and an end. I think we can all agree that when we have our mom or dad or someone we love start to share with us what happened to them today or yesterday, and they start sharing with us, you know, what happened, and it either goes on forever or it meanders or it gets really boring. You just start to glaze over and you check out. But then there's some people who share with you what happened to them yesterday, and you can't stop listening. And the big reason for that is because of the structure, the setup, the build, the payoff of their story. You know, we love to hear a story that sets up who is the hero, what do they want, where does the story take place. We need that in the setup. And even when we're sharing a casual thing of what happened to us yesterday or in a movie, if you don't have the right setup, everybody's lost. They check out and they won't continue to watch after the first 8 minutes.
Okay.
And the middle of the story is the build. We want to know, so what happened? What did the hero go through? What were the obstacles? What were the challenges? How did they suffer? And then the payoff is, what did they learn? What did they get out of the experience they had yesterday or in the movie? So the first thing is the structure. These other four I'll go through much quicker. The other one we mentioned in part one, you got to have a great hook in a story. You really only have 8 seconds to grab people's attention, whether it's a casual story, a pitch at work, or in a movie. When I'm putting together a movie trailer or a poster for a movie,
oh yeah,
I need to make sure I grab people's attention in 8 seconds. And you know, I'm in my house right now, and I'm looking at one of the movies I worked on, a poster on the wall, and it was Ratatouille. And I'm looking at the poster, and it's a picture of the rat, Remy, the main character, holding a piece of cheese with a very nervous smile on his face as he is surrounded by kitchen knives that are basically pinning him to a kitchen wall. And the tagline says, he's dying to become a chef.
That's good. That's
eight
very
seconds.
Good. Now,
you need to hook people. Yeah.
Right. Now, okay, I'm going to have you go into the patterns there. But first, sure. I need to ask you this question.
Yeah.
You tell us that we need to hook the people who are watching, listening, viewing, and so forth. And obviously that works, but why does it work? Are we predisposed to or wired for this? And has it always been that way? Or is this due to our technologically evolutionary process that we as humans have gone through? Here we are in the 21st century with all of this stuff. And 8 seconds, boy, that is a short time, although it's a long time in radio because you don't want you don't want any seconds of dead air.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, it has been said to me that in music, it is the spaces between the notes that makes the music music. So are our brains and chemistry wired up to be hooked in this fashion, and has it always been 8 seconds? Has it ever been longer than that? You know, maybe 2 minutes.
Well, you know what? It probably has been longer. I think, obviously, social media, TV, movies has really made our attention span low. But I think about some of the oldest stories, and let's think about Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
What ended up catching their attention and hooking them when they're in that garden?
It was snake.
Well,
it was the apple.
Snake. It was that fruit, right?
Fruit. That's right.
You know, I think one of the things that has always been a great hook for people is spotting something unusual, something that doesn't fit in that place, something that catches your eye. And you know, when I'm putting together a hook for the first, you know, sentence in a story or a visual hook, I'm trying to come up with either something that is unusual, something that's unexpected, something that lands you in an action, or something that lands you in a conflict. So, for example, whenever there is something that surprises you, catches your attention, shock value, that's something unexpected. Like a rat who wants to be a French chef.
Right.
Something unusual is taking something that is, not ordinary, but something that's extraordinary. Like, you know, I think about The Incredibles.
Oh, yeah, that's a great movie.
What if superheroes were banned from saving people?
Oh.
That's something that's unusual,
mm-hmm.
because we all know the ordinary world of superheroes is they save people. And then how many times have we been hooked by a conflict or an action? Either we are driving on the road, we see an accident, or we're flipping through channels, and all of a sudden we stop at the channel that has the good guys chasing the bad guys, or a couple in a very intense conversation. And so those are the types of hooks I'm looking for: unusual, unexpected, or lands you in an action or conflict. But once you hook somebody, that's great. That's great. You got their attention. You enticed them. But you need to keep their attention, right? And that is when the next thing people want to know is, how is this character, this situation they're in, going to potentially change them? How is Adam and Eve being enticed by that apple going to transform them in a good way or a bad way?
Mm-hmm.
Because all of us, we, as much as we hate to change as people,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and try something new, we are very attracted to seeing how other people change and how did they deal with it. So the second thing that happens in storytelling is a transformation, a character that goes to a change. We call it a character arc. And we want to know, how is the character going to change? Because then we can reflect this on our own lives and go, what would happen if I tried that? I changed. And so, and then, you know, I know we only have a certain amount of time on this program. So if it's hook, transformation, and story structure, the other two is making sure, and we already talked about this a little bit, make sure you connect with the right audience. Who do you want to connect with? And then the last one, speak from the heart. And I think you said that yourself, Richard. You want to make your stories authentic. You want to make sure that there is honesty, truth, that there is something in the story that connects with us in a universal, spiritual, authentic way. And so really, those are the five things that I elaborate on the book that not only make a great Pixar film, but make a great pitch at your next business meeting or telling the story around your company, you know?
Hmm. You know, and as I sit here thinking about this, as we were driving into work, I'm listening to Harry's stories in his songs, right? And I'm seeing the movie playing out in my head, and we're getting out and heading for the front of the workplace. And I'm saying, you know what? You couldn't make an hour and a half, 2 hour movie out of each one of these songs, but you could make maybe a 30 minute mini series out of each one of these songs, because they are, because of the way he writes these songs and presents them in the songs, they are so authentic. They you can feel. And sometimes he's writing about his own personal experiences, and other times he's just he's basing it upon, for example, there's the one song, Mr. Tanner, which is about a cleaner in the town in the Midwest, without going into the lyrics or singing it here.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this experience where the town folk say, hey, man, you should go to New York and you should make this your career. But he just loved to sing.
Yeah,
and he goes and he has that experience. Well, this song was based upon a review that Harry read of a particular person who had an audition, if you will, or a recital or what have you. And it was just beat the person down the way this particular critic wrote it. And so I'm just sitting here thinking about that. Maybe even the one song that's kind of humorous called 30,000 Pounds of Bananas. And so on and so forth. And even some of the other artists. And as you mentioned before, and I think too about breaking the formula, we just saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm.
And I remember the scene where they were fighting, so to speak, with the producer. Look, we want this song to be played on the radio.
Yeah.
He says, no way. There is no way a radio station is going to play a 6 minute song. Well, you know, they said the same thing to Harry Chapin about his 13-minute song, Taxi. And then the sequel was about as long. So you got about 20 minutes or more.
Yeah. And you know what I love too about Bohemian Rhapsody is the producer that said, you know, nobody is going to listen to that song, that long song in a back of a car, a bunch of teenage guys rocking out. No one's going to do it. And the actor that played that producer is Mike Myers, who was the star of Wayne's World. Yeah. And if you remember in Wayne's World, they're all listening to Bohemian Rhapsody in the car, rocking their heads.
Oh, my. I didn't even recognize him in Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's why it was so hilarious when he delivered that line. Oh, I got it immediately going, oh, my gosh.
Well, I'm going to have to watch it again. But it was such a wonderful film. I mean, it really was.
It's a great movie. It's a great movie.
I mean, because it's telling a great story. And I thought,
it is.
This is kind of weird. It's supposed to be about Queen, but it's sure focusing an awful lot on this this other guy here, the lead singer. You know, what's the deal here? But he was out there. And the thing that I liked early in the film as they were developing and growing and so forth was the cohesiveness. The story was being told of the cohesiveness of these four guys. One would come up with an idea and say, Freddie would say, hey, let's do this. And the other guys would sit there and think for a moment and say, yeah, let's do that. And it seemed like it was that way more often than not.
Oh, gosh. Well, Richard, we could talk forever about this, but let me just share a couple of thoughts that come to my head.
Sure.
First, when you are putting together a story, sometimes the story, like you had mentioned with Harry, can be something that is about somebody completely different. It doesn't have to be about yourself. It could be about the Tanner. Right?
Exactly.
Sometimes the story, though, is going to be about yourself. Mm-hmm. Like when Billy Joel wrote and sang the song, The Piano Man, that is about him. That is about his experience earning money in a bar, playing the piano, and the people he would meet.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie Mercury. It's a story about Freddie Mercury. But taking this back to business, you really want to be thinking about the same thing. You want to be thinking about how you can share stories that have happened to you or other people to be able to inspire people. And you had said this earlier on, there is a takeaway message. There's like a theme. There is something you want people to feel. You're not just making it necessary just for entertainment's sake, but there's a message you're sending out. And in the world of business, you want to think the same way. There is a message, there's a theme. You know, it's not that you're just trying to make stuff to make money. You're trying to make something to make people's lives better.
Yeah.
Whether it's through some tech, through apparel, through a vehicle. You really want to think about how you're making people's lives better. And when you think about that hero on a journey that I've been going back to again and again, the protagonist going through this beginning, middle, and an end, in the world of business, that hero is your consumer. It is your guest, like the Disney company says. And they are on a journey. They want to be a better parent. They want to have an experience with their family and go on a vacation, or they want to be able to have be healthier, or maybe have some extra money in the bank to be able to take care of their families. Mm-hmm. Really, the people in the business world need to see that their audience is their hero, and it's their job to be able to use storytelling to be able to put their audience, to paint a picture for their audience of how their story, their lives could be better if they engage with them, that if they try out that new product or service or idea. And I know this sounds very corporate-y and markety, and how can you even connect art or creativity in the world of business? But wouldn't it be a relief for all of us if there was more art and creativity in business? You know, wouldn't it make things a whole lot better? And then the one other thing that you said that came into my mind is that we don't do this all alone. You know, it wasn't when you watch Bohemian Rhapsody, when Freddie Mercury said, you know what, guys, I'm done with all of you, to his band, I'm doing this on my own. We saw that it just his creativity and his world just deteriorated around him. We do need others to be able to bring out the best in us. I think we see that the best business leaders out there, they may not be the smartest or the most creative, but they are very good at surrounding themselves with the smartest and the most creative to be able to pull out the best in other people. And when you end up thinking about wanting to inspire storytelling in your company, it really starts by creating a culture that allows people to be better storytellers and to be able to use storytelling to be able to inspire and encourage and sustain people to be able to work together at a company and inspire one another to be creative. I could go on forever about this, but but it just brings up all those things. And when Freddie Mercury came back to the band, he admitted to everybody that you're my family. You guys are the ones who push back at me, that give me creative accountability when I'm going off the rails. I need you. Mm. And just like so many great bands that, you know, I think about the Beatles, you know, that they ended up inspiring one another in different ways. Someone starts off with a riff that ends up leading to some lyrics. Ringo Starr comes up with some crazy title, adds, you know, a drum beat to it. And yeah, there's a little bit of arguing, but it's that healthy creative accountability that I think all of us need as storytellers in a entertainment world or storytellers in the business world, you know?
Yeah. And I think about that in the context of what I have been doing for 40 years in this business. And yeah, I could today, I could say, you know what, I'm going to go solo. I'm going to syndicate this. I'm going to go on my own and so forth. I can never, ever say, and I remember back, I want to say 10 or 15 years ago, and I seem to recall there was this one group protesting in Texas, and I think it was during one of the campaigns, one of the political campaigns, where they were all saying, I did this on my own, you know, these small business owners. Mm. And I sit there going, not only did you not do it all on your own, you can't do it on your own because you require other people, not just other vendors to provide you with the materials to set, to put together to make whatever it is that you're selling. But you also need other people to buy your product or take on your service. So I am beholden to literally thousands, if not tens of thousands of people, listeners in that category. In your case, viewers, I'm beholden to all of these people because I wouldn't be where I am today if it weren't for them. Someone said, well, yeah, but all you did was you applied and you got the job. I said, yeah, but this radio program that we've been doing for 12 years, that I've been interviewing for 40 years, and the things that I've learned and some of the experiences I've had, places that I've gone, people that I've met, unbelievable crowd that I have connected with, you included, Matthew. I didn't do this by myself. We do not, and no idea is created in a vacuum. I don't want to get off on this per se, but I get into the whole intellectual property rights issue, you know, and I sit here going, what are you talking about? You can't sue them because you think that that was your riff from your song. You should be honored that they are flattering you in such a way that they recognize your genius, that they're using that in your song or in your picture or in your, you know, whatever it is. Because if someone were to take these interviews and take my voice out and put someone else's voice in asking the questions, I would not file a lawsuit. I'd say, great, I don't care about me. I want the information from Matthew Lund to get out there to people to be able to make a difference.
It makes me think of, you know, another movie that's up for the Oscars, which is The Star Is Born, you know, A Star Is Born. And there's a line in that film. This is, you know, if I'm getting this right, it's Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, right? Mm-hmm. And the character that's Bradley Cooper, who is this Western singer, he makes the comment that, I could be getting this wrong, forgive me, people out there, but that there's only 8 chords for every song that can be sang.
Yeah.
But the thing that makes it different is your story that you have to tell in those 8 chords.
Yeah.
You know, so and, it's so true.
And I love the one story, especially when it comes to not so much exactly business, but it led to a business that developed in the late 19th and early 20th century. The story of Edison. And he was asked once, so let me ask you, how many times did you fail before you got the light bulb right? He says, I never failed. I just found 999 ways that the light bulb didn't work.
Exactly. That's a good way of looking at it, you know?
Because, so really, there is no failure, you know, in this context. You know, and that's where you start to perfect your storytelling abilities, whether it's in the boardroom or on the playground or wherever it might be.
Absolutely. You know, I saved one chapter that was, you know, maybe it would have felt, maybe it seems a little out of place, but I didn't think it was out of place in my book, which was a chapter that was devoted to how to be able to inspire creativity in the workplace. And one of the things I talk about is absolutely that fear of failure. And, you know, I felt it was important to put in there because I could give people all of the tools to be able to tell and be a great storyteller. But the one thing that, that really comes down to the reader is you need to allow yourself this, because so many of us don't want to take chances because we're afraid of failing. But really, it helps a lot, like with this Edison quote. Don't look at it as failing. Just look at it as you're just getting rid of one of the versions that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you really look at the best businesses, the best creators out there, from Walt Disney to Steve Jobs, they took chances. And if you want to do something great, whether it's with a company or an idea, you need to take chances that may fail. Not just may fail, they will fail.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to pick yourself up and you're going to fix it and you're going to try it again. And I really think that this is not only one of the main traits of a great leader, but one of the main traits of a great creative person is, I don't know, other than just, you know, try and try again, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, using that, not just the example of Edison, but also the example of Freddie Mercury and that producer. Hey, I don't care what everybody else is doing. This is what I'm doing, and this is the way I'm going to do it. And it may or may not succeed, although he had the gut feeling it's going to succeed. And I got to tell you, not to belabor the point again of the film, but that particular song and obviously that album, I was not a Queen fan. When my brother, that was one of his favorite bands. Those folks were not, and Journey and a lot of the other bands in the 70s and 80s wasn't my cup of tea at that time.
Mm.
But now I love listening to that stuff. Not because it's now classic rock. but, you know, it is one of those things where, you know, I struggle with this in my own life as far as business is concerned. I mean, I had a business for 1 year in 1994. I didn't realize that when I went to fill out my taxes, I was going to have to fill out an extra couple of forms.
Oh, yeah.
And owe the IRS $3,000
more. Yeah.
And so I shut the business down. I says, I won't do this ever again until I have an accountant. I can afford an accountant who will take care of this and make sure this is taken care of from January 1, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to deal with this the following year, that kind of stuff, and on and on and on. Some say, well, yeah, but you have to deal with the business and da-da-da-da-da. And I hear all of these different formulas as far as, you know, starting a business. You got to come up with a business plan in order to get money from a bank or financial institution or investor, dot, dot, dot. And people around the country, if not around the world, you'd probably agree, Matthew, they're finding all kinds of different ways of making their dreams come true and achieving the things that they want to achieve in their lives. And
especially
that's exciting
today.
Yeah.
Gosh, it seems like there is all types of new opportunities to be able to raise money for an idea, you know, online.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I come from a family that have been entrepreneurs and business owners for multiple generations. And I'm very proud to say that our business has always been around toys. We've owned toy stores. And my great grandparents started them. And I'm actually a co-owner of our toy stores, Jeffrey's Toys, oldest toy store in San Francisco.
No way.
And yeah. And, so I do know a thing or two about business and along with art and creativity and storytelling. And, but I'll tell you, it is hard, owning and running and keeping a brick and mortar family store alive, especially in this day and age.
Sure.
You know?
And it takes a lot of, I was going to say stamina, but fortitude as well, to be willing to take on this modern day challenge because of the different issues that a brick and mortar has to deal with, obviously the internet. So it's very interesting stuff.
Oh yeah.
Matthew Lunn, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I wish we had more time, but we are going to have to wrap things
Me
up.
Me too.
And if you should ever find yourself, far away from San Francisco, I don't know, down here in Santa Barbara, maybe. we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation because, we can talk about all of this kind of stuff, infinity and beyond.
Absolutely. Well, it was great talking with you, Richard.
I want to remind our listeners. Oh, you're very welcome. I want to remind our listeners, though, Matthew, that they can go to your website, MatthewLunnStories.com. And before we let you go, I have one final question as I let our listeners know about the best story wins, how to leverage Hollywood storytelling in business and beyond. You can go to that website and we'll have that link as well. Three final questions for you, as I like to ask all of my guests. You may have addressed them in some fashion during the interview, but I'm going to ask them directly. The first one is, who is Matthew Lunn?
You know, I would say that the most important thing to me in my life is being a dad. That is me. So I would say that if I had a business card, along with saying I'm a storyteller, I would say I'm a dad.
Mm. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
What I really am focused on right now and is being able to share with people what I have learned from being a part of the story team that's put together these Pixar films on how they can be better storytellers in business, education, whatever. I want to be able to pass along this knowledge.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Oh, boy. Well, I think a combination of those first two answers, as I really see my life's purpose, is as a father of three kids. And I really want to do my job of being a great dad for them right now. And also to be able to inspire people to be better storytellers, which I think will make their lives more rewarding. So right now in my life, it's more about giving than taking.
Once again, Matthew Lunn, the best story wins. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.